The late 1960s were a tumultuous time. There was a lot going on, certainly in Hollywood and, in fact, all over the world. If you think about the volatile times of the late 1960s, you think about things like the Vietnam War, which was unfolding and becoming more and more gruesome, and people were facing it every night on the news. In addition, we had tragedies like the assassination of Martin Luther King, the assassination of Robert Kennedy in June of 1968, just on the heels of when he was about to accept the nomination for President of the United States for the Democratic Party. And those were following events like the assassination of John F. Kennedy in 1963. We would follow that in the latter part of the 1960s, by 1969, with the gruesome series of events in Hollywood, which was the death of Sharon Tate and a number of others in a house in Benedict Canyon by Charles Manson and his followers. That time, that helter-skelter environment in Hollywood and around the country was ever-present in the media, in the news. There would be follow-up with shootings at Kent State. And there were just so many different things that were happening in that latter part of the 1960s that made it such a tumultuous time. One of the events was the event that we're talking about here, which was in October of 1968, and it was the death of Ramon Navarro. It was a scandal, it was salacious, it was gruesome, and it was all over the media. Welcome back to Hollywood Declassified. I'm John Mullen, your host. Thank you for tuning in. We're talking about Ramon Navarro. We're going to get into his life here and introduce you a little bit to who he was and why he was relevant. He was born in 1899 as Ramon Gil Samaniego in Durango, Mexico. He was one of 13 children. His father was a dentist. The family fled Durango to Mexico City around 1911 during the Mexican Revolution. And from there, they relocated to the United States, settling in Los Angeles around 1917. They left Mexico because they feared that their wealth and money would make them a target. By this point, most of their wealth had evaporated, and not long after arriving in the United States, Ramon's father became ill, and Ramon became one of the heads of the household, finding any kind of odd job to make money to keep the family afloat. Ramon held assorted jobs. He was a piano teacher, a grocery store clerk, a theater usher, and a busboy at a hotel, all while trying to find a career in the movies. He especially liked opera music and hoped to find himself a role as an entertainer, even using his musical skills. For a while, Ramon was a cafe singer. He also worked as an extra in numerous films and performed in a vaudeville ballet troupe. Eventually, he began winning more noticeable screen parts. He had a small part in the film A Small Town Idol in 1921, wearing only a loincloth and a turban. He also had a small part in The Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse, also in 1921, which starred a man by the name of Rudolph Valentino and was directed by a guy by the name of Rex Ingram. His professional breakthrough came when Rex Ingram cast him as a swashbuckling suave villain in The Prisoner of Zenda in 1922. The film was a huge hit, and it followed with hit roles in movies like Scaramouche in 1923 and The Arab in 1924. Navarro was dubbed the screen's newest Latin lover, and he became a heartthrob to millions of women who went to his movies just to look at him on the screen. Ironically, though, he was a homosexual, and he preferred the company of men. In 1925, Ramon was earning about $1,000 a week at MGM when he was given the lead in a big-budget epic called Ben-Hur. It would become the zenith of his career. The film was a huge hit, and he became a huge star. After the death of Rudolph Valentino, he took on the Latin lover role in Hollywood and became the biggest star heartthrob Hollywood had seen. He built a 17-room mansion so that his parents and several of his brothers and sisters could live with him. For a while, he thought of leaving the movies to become an opera singer. or even a priest. But the talkie revolution allowed him to continue both acting and singing. It let him expand his talents without leaving the profession that he had found success in. He made his first talkie in the musical The Devil May Care in 1929. His career continued with roles in Matahari in 1931 opposite Greta Garbo and The Barbarian in 1934 opposite Myrna Loy. However, he was growing restless. He didn't feel that the roles were making him as much a success as they had before. He went on the stage tour with his sister Carmen in Europe and South America, hoping to launch a career in singing. When MGM failed to renew his contract in the mid-1930s, he stepped down on his own and attempted to continue by directing and producing a Spanish-language film in Los Angeles. It wasn't a huge success. He then tried a comeback, making a film The Sheik Steps Out in 1937, but it didn't result in a box office success. By the 1940s, his career was faltering, and he was occasionally making features abroad, and he was then eventually starting to appear in television when television turned out in the 1950s. He had a 50-acre ranch in San Diego, and he did some touring as well as some character parts. His final movie was a movie called Heller in Pink Tights in 1960, although he did continue making some TV appearances into the 1960s. He found a smaller house in Laurel Canyon in the 1960s and found a little bit of TV work. In 1964, he appeared in 3 episodes of Dr. Kildare. He also appeared in an episode of Rawhide and the TV series Thriller in 1962. Bonanza in 1965 gave him a small part in a big successful series, and he also would appear in 2 episodes of Combat in 1964 and 1965. His last 2 roles, one was The Wild Wild West in 1967, and the other was a small part in a TV series called The High Chaparral. It was about the Cannon family and took place in the Arizona Territory in the 1870s. By the latter part of 1968, he was pretty much had used up most of his income from his film career and was really just existing. He'd get occasional money from some of the small parts that he would get on TV. And again, he had this small house, this bungalow that he lived in Laurel Canyon. But he really didn't have much, even though he was still living this supposed glamorous life of a Hollywood movie star. One of the things he spent his money on were male escorts, and that would lead to his downfall.